From Connext Media, this is Atlanta Born and Brand. I'm your host, Jonathan Hilliard. We started Atlanta Born and Brand back in 2018 with the goal of bringing to light the incredible small businesses and entrepreneurs that make this city unique. Last year, we expanded our focus to give you a peek behind the curtain at some of the city's most iconic brands. We want to bring you stories from the whole spectrum of Atlanta culture. There are extraordinary organizations and companies in every corner of our city, both big and small. And this season, we can't wait to dig in even deeper into the people behind them. Our mission for this show is that you know about and care about your neighbors, because Atlanta is our city, and this is our story. Servscape is Georgia's online landscape marketplace delivered. From inspiration to installation, Servscape offers beautiful, resilient landscapes that are locally grown, designed just for you, and delivered to your home or job site. Founder and CEO Mario Cambardella sits down with us today to talk about how Servscape is using their technology to connect undermarketed landscape designers and plant growers with homeowners. So, first of all, Mario, thanks for having us. I appreciate this beautiful space you've set up for us, and looking forward to the opportunity to talk with you. But the question I love to start off with people is, you're walking down the street, or you're at a Super Bowl party, you meet somebody new for the first time, and they ask you, what do you do? Your answer to that is?
Well, so personally, I say I'm a landscape architect, which is so funny you mentioned the Super Bowl, because last night there was a commercial about, it was Megan McCarthy, and she goes, and there's a cute gardener, and the gardener who's trimming the hedge, he goes, landscape architect. And so he corrects her. Funny enough, that's actually her husband, and that's a joke. That's kind of a joke that we always, landscape architects get a lot, because a lot of people will say, hey, oh, you're a landscape architect, let me show you something on my yard or my lawn. And honestly, I didn't go to school, like college, for 9 years to help identify a bald spot in somebody's yard. But however, it's something that everybody can identify with, because especially in Atlanta, the landscape is so prominent. We live in the city in the forest, and we really value our landscape and private spaces, especially in a place like Atlanta. So I always lead with, I am a landscape architect, and usually have to provide a little bit more context for some of the things that I do.
We're gonna come back to the 9 years in college, trust me. But the same question is asked, or a similar question is asked, what is Servscape? The elevator pitch, you know, when you're in the elevator with your venture capitalist, what's the pitch that you give about Servscape?
So Servscape is Atlanta's online marketplace delivered. On our website, servscape.com, you can find dozens of local landscape designers to fit your style, your brand, anything for your dream backyard. You can also get the largest selection of plant material specifically grown for this area. And then you can get referrals, and it's a beautiful network of landscape contractors completely vetted by our landscape designers and our staff at Servscape. And you can have that all on your phone, delivered directly to your house, site, job, whatever, so that you could be on our mission to build beautiful and resilient landscapes.
From inspiration to installation, that's a good line. Well played. I will come back to Servscape in detail, but I'd love to just go back before the 9 years of college. As you're growing up, you're deciding where you want to go to school, what do you want to study, what led you to landscape architecture?
So I grew up right down the street, off High Point Road in Sandy Springs, and in the backyard was this beautiful creek, and I would always be there. I remember very vividly my mother reaching for the wooden spoon to give me a spanking because I just got my new shoes muddy. And so I was always out there. Nothing could stop me from being out in the woods and in the creek and building forts and rope swings. And I really found a love for nature there. And then that bowled into Boy Scouts, which I'm an Eagle Scout, and a love for camping and outdoors and all of those skills and really just camaraderie. of that. And then when I remember the day that I found the profession landscape architecture, which really brought home all these experiences that I had through nature into a profession, a career. And that's when I knew exactly what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
So in the creek, after a hard rain, you get the like boats out and you start at one end of the creek and, you know, watch the boats go all the way down the creek through the property?
Well, yeah, it was also kind of shaping the land to support whatever it was that I was doing, whether it was fort building or treehouse making or building dams and rerouting the creek and these kind of making these little pools and stuff like that. So really kind of how we sculpt or shape the earth to kind of create new experiences, I found just significant sort of enjoyment through that. And it stuck with me and I still do it today.
You went to the next level from what we did with the toy boats, hence the landscape architect thing. Good decision on your part. So you go to school, you're learning about this profession that you're falling in love with. 9 years is a long time.
9 years is a long time.
Talk to me about just sort of the progression through school, and did you know while you're doing that exactly what you wanted? You know, we have careers and then we have occupations. You know, did you know what you wanted your occupation to be as you were training to do that?
So I was 19 years old, second year in college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was following my dad's footsteps of just being like a high school teacher. But I didn't really have the zeal for it. So I was studying for this finals right before Christmas break, and I see my old buddy kind of running into the thing. And why is he running into a building at 1 o'clock in the morning? I have no idea. So I stop and say, Charlie, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I got to go finish my final. Now, who finishes a final at 1 o'clock in the morning? Didn't make any sense to me. So he's like, yeah, I'm on the fourth floor. Well, I was studying on the third floor. I said, well, let me just take a little study break and go see what you're working on. So we go in the elevator, hop off on the fourth floor, go down this long hallway, and then this long hallway opens up to this giant room, a studio, with these large drafting desks, and there was people everywhere. And it sounded like a circus, much different from the little study hall that I was in. And there was beer cans, and then there was like 80, it smelled like toxic markers. There was people sleeping on couches, nastier than my fraternity house. And I just looked at him, and I looked at what he was working on was this like model of this golf course. And I just like, this is my tribe. This is my home. I want to do this.
I found it.
So yeah, I found it. So right then and there, I knew exactly what I was going to do and didn't study anymore for that final, whatever I was about to take. And then quickly hopped into the landscape architecture major at the University of Georgia.
I was about to ask you where you went to school. There you go. So you make the switch, you know, you're going through training, you finally get finished with school. What are your first steps after school? What'd you do right out of college?
Well, I was a very industrious person. I enjoyed drawing, but I also wanted to do more construction. I wanted to work with my hands a little bit more. So I found the very best landscape construction and development company in the country called Valley Crest, and now called Brightview. Had a wonderful opportunity to do an internship with them in Denver, Colorado, and won a small internship competition in which they gave me a free an offer, an assigning bonus to go anywhere in the country at graduation. And so I chose my path to go work for a landscape architect in a small town of called Fairhope, Alabama, which is down on Mobile Bay, and did a lot of work for Florida Panhandle out of that office. So it was a large swath of area to cover a lot of design projects. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience to work for not only a great company, but also a great boss in Lois Schindelbauer, who I'm still, thankfully, really great friends with today.
Hmm. At what point do you start thinking in your brain, hey, I do have this job that I really enjoy, but I'm thinking there's something else I want to do down the line. When do the ideas and when does Surfscape as it exists now start to kind of enter your consciousness?
Well, I also knew that some of the plants that I enjoyed when I was a kid you know, gardening or and doing stuff in the backyard with my mom and my dad, like fruit trees and berry bushes. And I can remember a friend of mine sharing with me fresh blackberries that we would find on the edge of the woods and stuff like that. And that sort of connection with the land and food was always very important to me. So as a practitioner, I'd always find it difficult that traditional landscape stores and garden centers wouldn't carry a lot of the food producing plants that I really wanted. And so I was constantly trying to get to the source, like who are these growers? Who are these farmers around Georgia that were really growing some of this really cool stuff like muscadine vine and blackberries and raspberries so that I can incorporate them into these beautiful landscape plants? Because just beautiful for me wasn't fulfilling enough. And it left me a little empty by doing designs purely for the aesthetic, usually with somebody driving right by at 50 miles per hour. It just felt a little empty, unfulfilled. And bringing in the food element enabled me to nourish that passion. And the market really didn't support that. Garden centers still often don't support that in the way that I wish they would. So out of necessity, I was looking at ways in which we could utilize technology to support this issue. Wasn't the sole reason why we started Surfscape, but it certainly was a big part.
And as you are in the ideation phase, you know, it seems like, you know, any sort of new business idea in 2023 now for sure, but even over the last 10 years, you have to incorporate the internet in some way.
Yeah.
And just the on-demand sort of lifestyle that we live. When did you start thinking that way of, okay, we're creating this network of farmers in Georgia who grow these things, like you said, that you can't find at, you know, at your local Home Depot in the garden center, but we want to connect other people with these folks. When do you marry the two of those and say, okay, let's bring those farmers to, you know, to our customer base? How does that process go?
Yeah, I remember looking at a book of Dudley Nursery, which is way out in Thompson, Georgia. They're about a little over 2 hours away, and how low the prices were. And it was great material. And so I said, I would call them and I would ask for the quantities, and they had it in the thousands. And they would be selling to garden centers all over the country. And I said, well, what if we put those inventory numbers online and pre-sold them for customers that really wanted them? Now, I couldn't drive one to a particular homeowner, but if maybe 10 or 12 homeowners bought the one, then I can make a route out of it. So that was a little bit of the genesis.
Yeah.
The second part was there were so many people, so many landscape designers like myself that, again, maybe it was food producing, but it was just a larger selection in and of itself. So you would have, for someone like me, I'd have to pick up the phone. I mean, this is still an industry that works on fax machines. Seriously. So it was either a fax machine or a phone call, and I didn't have a fax machine. So you make a lot of phone calls of availability. But if your creativity of your design is limited to one store down the street, then you're really not doing the service as you're called to do as a professional. Because the design really needed this one X, Y, and Z, and just down the street didn't have that available because I made the call. Now, projects have delays and all these types of things. So let's say there was a 2-week delay. Well, now I got to go recall and resource and get all those sort of availabilities again. And so you find yourself doing the same thing over and over in this pattern that is very not productive. And so what were ways in which we can bring real-time availability from the farm to the buyer, whether that's a homeowner or a professional, so that they can know and feel comfortable purchasing? Yeah, it might take a few days to get there. But at the same token, you know. Knowing is a powerful vehicle, and especially knowing the vast array of selection that you have. It's like a painter with a palette. If I just give you three colors, you know, you might make a lot of colors. Maybe this is a bad example, but if I'm giving you 150 colors, the speed of which and the decisiveness of which you have to work is expedited. And time is money, and you can do more jobs, you can do more work if you have great information, good data. I like to tell people a lot of times that we're not a traditional nursery, we're more of a data nursery. We support the data coming from local, typically under-marketed farms. Typically, these are guys and girls that don't have maybe access to the Home Depot buyers. Maybe they're just not big enough, but they're perfect for ServiceScape to support them. And they want connectivity with homeowners, and that's why they're growing them. And with ServiceScape, we can actually tell you, we can tell which homeowner got your plants. We have the technology to know where every one of our growers' plants goes to, what home they're at. And I think that's a powerful message of connectivity and purpose. And we can fuel that drive in some of our growers as we support them, as they support us, as they support our customers.
There's so many different paths as an entrepreneur in the launch phase. There's the, and I know you came from, you already said you were coming from a job that you enjoyed with a great company. There's the like one foot, you know, still on solid ground at the job that's secure and is gonna cut you a paycheck every other week, you know, while you're kind of tapping your foot in your new passion. And then there's the approach of, all right, I'm diving all into the new thing. I'm gonna give it everything I can. I'm curious where you landed. What was the process of launching like for you? Was it stressful? Were there unknowns? What was that like for you?
Well, certainly starting anything new, having a vision, and then going forward with the execution of it is a lot of unknowns. It takes a lot of guts, and it takes a strong support staff. I am fortunate to have a co-founder, even though venture capitalists might see me as a solo entrepreneur or solo founder of ServiceScape. My wife has been with me the whole time, and my family. So my parents, my in-laws, even my four-year-old likes to come, you know, move around some plants or water in the summer. It is a family affair. I mean, everybody's got to be on board because it's more than it takes a village. I mean, it takes a huge network of people. And then also, it takes a lot of time. It takes a considerable amount of time to give up nights and weekends. I was here last night with my father watching the Super Bowl because he didn't want me watching because I had to do a drawing because it was due today. And so he didn't want to leave me here watching and he doesn't even like football. But he just wanted to come hang out, you know, eat a slice of pizza and be a part of the process. So entrepreneurialism is not a... It's basically really more of a state of mind of that you're committed to solving some deep, maybe deep societal issues. And if your mission is not strong enough or you don't find enough intrinsic value from that mission, it's going to be very, very difficult to get through the dark times. I liken our work, we provide food producing, oxygen making machines. I mean, I want to get behind that. I want to be a part of that. You know, all the plants behind me are just pumping oxygen from the things that we exhaust. And so to live in that kind of symbiotic relationship with nature and be a part of the solution.
We have a saying on our show pretty often that, and I'm sure you've heard it, is a rising tide raises all ships or all boats. Mm-hmm. Your business model kind of backs that up, right? We've talked about the local farmers that, you know, maybe don't have the access to the high-end retail buyers. You're shining a light on those farmers. What's that experience been like working with those farmers?
You know, I'm sure there are challenges, and I'm sure there's experiences, you know, on a positive end that, that maybe you would have never been able to guess in, unless you have gone to the lengths that you have.
Yeah, so, you know, having a marketplace of all these independent professionals, specifically under-marketed individuals, you know, it's one of those things where they might have heard a pitch like yours before, and it's good to, like, kind of acknowledge that, because you're kind of claiming that here you have this technological whiz-bang thing that's going to, you know, instantly make them so much more successful. My pitch is a little bit different, and one of the reasons why we've had success with some of our the professionals in our network is because we're one of the first models to really only exclusively use e-commerce. And what that means is the customer goes ahead and secures the purchase, and then we provide that payment forward to whatever professional, whether it's a designer or a local contractor or a local grower. And so when those local grower, when we put an order in, that local grower comes to our switchyard to deliver their plants, they get a check. And so it's kind of one of those things where they're not used to that. They're used to waiting 30 to 60, some of the big box stores, 120 days for them to get their paycheck. And for them to get their paycheck within 3 days is kind of a different feel. And it enables them to really kind of feel like they're more of a partner with us, because we are selling the material for them. We're acting as this agent, a marketing agent in a sense, but also logistics. We provide that last mile delivery. And then also the sort of the data and the reassurance that it's meeting the customer. And then again, providing that level of information to support their connectivity with the end game, with the end customer. So our designers are very similar. Many of our landscape designers join because of love of a nature, not because they love websites. So providing a landing page for a landscape designer that still hand draws and that needs additional access or exposure to the market is a great opportunity for them, because we've built the infrastructure of Servscape so that they don't have to know. They just simply get an email. So-and-so, a homeowner, has secured a landscape design from you because they love your work and you meet their style, because it's kind of like a dating game, a dating website, because I'm a homeowner and I live at this neighborhood and I want a food producing landscape and I have a budget and this is the type of work that I would like to do. I don't want to do everything. I just want to do this one thing. And then you can render down from all the designers the exact designer that fits that criteria through filtering. So I think we're really making some great headway by utilizing e-commerce for services to make sure that you're getting the right service for your project. I truly feel that the secret to a successful project is having the designer that meets the scope of the project, and that the homeowner really understands the full scope of the designer's work. And I think that we can do that through technology and an e-commerce site that clearly and concisely articulates a best practice process.
Yeah. Swipe right on your favorite designer, right?
Yeah.
And there you go. sorry, I couldn't resist. The marketplace is obviously a huge part of what you guys are doing. You were just talking about a project you were working on last night. Obviously, you're still the design piece. The dreaming is still a big part of who you are, and I would assume as a result, a big part of who Servscape is. What do you love about that so much? What speaks to you about that after so many years of being involved in the business?
I love challenges. And when somebody comes to you and says, hey, I'm thinking about doing a beer garden, but I want it Asian inspired, and I want it to be something that nobody's ever seen before. I want to create a new experience. Oh, and by the way, it's a very challenging site. These are these puzzles. These are these like opportunities to exercise my mind and think creatively. by really kind of blending some of the economic factors of the project with some of the ecological factors of the project, the drainage, the sunshade effect, all these ecological considerations. And then lastly, but just as important, is the social aspects. How are we creating, how is this part of a larger community? How is it speaking to the local connectivity with the Beltline? So thinking of it within context of a community, how does it cultivate, how does it be a magnet for the type of community that this person wants to create? So thinking through all those levels of consideration for the right, what could be the right solution. And then the other little element to all of this that I think is so profound, given our profession, is time. Because landscapes evolve. Landscapes move, they're growing. And people's needs, wants, and desires grow with that. And so how could you be planning for today and it actually evolve to what it could be or could or want to be in 20 years? Time is definitely one of those elements of landscape designers and architects' consideration that's quite really fascinating, because not everybody gets to do that.
Right. So Surfscape in its form today, how is it different 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road? Where do you see growth taking you?
Today, Surfscape is Georgia's largest online landscape marketplace delivered. In a few years, it'll be the South's largest landscape marketplace delivered. We're looking at cities like Greenville, Chattanooga, Birmingham, the Panhandle, where I have started my career, to support many communities throughout there that would like to have access to a greater number of plants, to have a lower cost. We didn't even talk about costs, but our methodology makes it so that it's 10 to 20% less expensive than the traditional model. That would like a farm to landscape experience in terms of the freshness of that material. So we believe that this methodology is going to resonate with other communities that want to see more beautiful and resilient landscapes.
It's interesting. I was just hearing a similar conversation recently about coffee and about how many middlemen the beans go through before they get to your local store, before they get to your local coffee shop. It seems like there's a similar sort of attack strategy in what you guys are doing in removing some of the middlemen and, like you said, shortening that period of time from grower to consumer. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, you heard it's got to go from A to B to C. Well, what we're doing is A is agriculture and C is the consumer. And we just make a beeline. That's the B we are. We make a beeline from A to C because we don't have to hold the material anymore. The traditional garden centers are really just a nursery. And sometimes not all nurseries are really babying those plants like they should. The one that cares for that plant probably the most is the grower. How do we get from the grower's hands to yours as quickly as possible? And that's our mission.
How do you do that? Talk to me about the challenges you face in logistics of delivering from so many different local growers to so many different consumers. Because like you were saying, the reason the model has been what it's been is for ease, right? You take all the plants, you take them to one garden center, you let the consumers come and pick them up. You don't have to deal with logistics.
Yeah.
You have to deal with logistics.
A lot of logistics and the distribution, because we provide the distribution of all these plant, last mile distribution of every order. So it's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of ways in which Surfscape has built some proprietary and custom out pricing algorithms, inventory algorithms, doing ways, procuring plants on our end to support what's called critical mass processing. So it's not easy. It's rather complex. It's very complex. When I proposed this back in 2018 to a few people, they thought it really just couldn't be done. But I'm here today saying that we're now on orders 6,000 363, because I just saw 6363 order number come through this morning. And we've done everything from HGTV to Netflix to NFL football stars to people you have never heard of that just wanted to grow more joy in their lives. The secret to any Surfscape success is not necessarily the complexity or the technological breakthrough of what we do. It's really the people that, our team. It's really the people that make it happen. And so our tech lead, Brian Barbu, who I found on Upwork as a 22-year-old, nice. Hadn't finished Kennesaw State yet, didn't even know a shrub from a bush, you know? And so, you know, recruiting him and, you know, working with him for a year and a half, him working with me, teaching me e-commerce, and us coming together to really to fulfill the mission. Katie Scott, who I found working in agriculture, doing a really complex logistics and last mile delivery system for agriculture. She knew the system that I wanted to build because she worked within it, but it's different moving corn versus a 40-foot tree. And so working with all these people that had these unique skill sets, knowing e-commerce and knowing supply chain logistics, but then bringing them all together for a particular nuanced industry that not many people really either want to know or really have the patience to learn the nuance of a particular industry like live plant. It was bringing everybody together for that, again, that mission. That's what really enabled us to grow very quickly and on the same page, because I believe we had a purpose.
So I'm a consumer, and I'm interested in using Surfscape. Talk to me about the process, whether I'm the end consumer or whether I am a contractor or a designer or a grower that wants to be, a part of your marketplace. How do I go about interacting with Surfscape? What's my best process?
Surfscape.com will take you through the inspiration to installation process. So whether you're a practitioner in one of those stages, so you have inspiration, you have design, you have your shopping or your plant purchasing experience, and then you have your installation experience. So the nice thing for a consumer is that maybe you just need help in one of those aspects, or maybe you need the whole thing. So it's a one-stop shop for many purchasing. And then for any of the professionals, it's an awesome opportunity to engage. And then on the website, you can join Surfscape as a collaborator, as either a grower or a designer or as a contractor. And it's part of a team. It's part of this wonderful ecosystem of all these professional allied industries that take to grow and build and maintain a beautiful and resilient dream landscape. It takes a whole ecosystem to make it happen. And the ecosystem just in Atlanta is huge. I mean, Georgia alone produces $1 billion worth of live plants a year. And the Atlanta market is close to that when you consider all the different aspects of the landscape industry. So just in Atlanta, this is a huge market. Many, many professionals, over 2,000 landscape professionals in the metro Atlanta area. And we just represent a fraction of those. So we think that Surfscape saves time and money and space. And we feel that for many practitioners, it's going to be extremely important to really become a better professional in this industry.
It's such a chicken or the egg type of a question in business and in entrepreneurship of, you know, bootstrapping versus funding and all these different paths. And people have been successful in both paths. how do you strike that balance in Servescape when it comes to investment in the company? And obviously, there's a lot of sweat equity put in by you and your team, a lot of intellectual property there. But where do you stand on funding versus bootstrapping, and how has Servescape gone about that over its history?
Yeah, after I left the mayor's office to start Servescape, and I had already had a budding family, I already had my firstborn, Perry, and I knew that the element of time wasn't on my side. I knew that the methodology would work, maybe. And so, whereas I had convinced my greatest funder, my wife, I also needed to convince, I needed to convince myself that we would find product market fit. To find product market fit sometimes takes time, takes multiple iterations. We launched March 10th of 2020. 5 days later, there was a complete shutdown of everything. So whereas we went to market to sell to small design builders, kind of like the mid or low market for business to business kind of purchasing, and that's where we wanted to start. Once the pandemic hit and the Pike's Nurseries and the big box garden centers all closed down, we had to pivot really quickly because every homeowner, we had 1,000 people show up at our website wanting to buy, and they were homeowners. I hadn't planned on selling to homeowners, but when the digital door starts knocking, you want to answer because they were ready to pay. So we took down the restrictions and we enabled homeowners, and that changed our business course. Once we saw that there was a significant traction, we did $100,000 in 100 days. And a lot of that was pandemic-induced, but pandemic-induced the whole buyer mentality. It expedited e-commerce purchasing by 5 to 10 years, somewhere into that range. And so it really gave people the chance to see the quality, to really witness. And I'm thrilled to say that 35% of our customers are repeat customers. And so we had a gentleman who ordered this morning. He was the 6363 order. It's his 12th order. And he's doing a mini botanical gardens at his residence in Conyers, Georgia. So we're thrilled to be this point source solution for people to develop their dream landscape. And once they see our methodology, they come back. So fast forward, we're making decisions now. Do we want to expand the team? Do we want to grow so that I'm not out there doing all the deliveries? And to do that, you really needed to invest in the business, invest more in marketing, invest more into developing a design studio. And a lot of this organization and coordination takes a significant amount of time. And another thing of our business is that it is seasonal. So it is a rather sort of lumpy, as they say. And so we made the decision to take additional capital from outside sources because we saw the trajectory. We wanted to build the right team, not just temporary labor. We really wanted to build leaders and to make that type of investment in a company because we saw the proof points at an early age. Because of COVID, we were able to kind of test and validate whether or not we had a viable business. And so once we did, we sought some outside capital. We did Techstars, which is a national accelerator program. And then we launched an angel round, which I'm pleased to say is nearing completion, and we should be closed on our fundraising for that. And we also launched a crowd round through a platform called WeFunder. It was the idea that at this stage, we really want to invite our customers, the people that have been with us through those first 2 years, the opportunity to be investors in our company. The people that have ordered the 13 times and the 14 times, to give them an opportunity to be shareholders. And so we launched a WeFunder round. We said we were gonna give up 1% of the company, and we ended up raising $60,000. We're valued at $6 million. So we raised $60,000 in 60 days from about 60 customers. So we're very proud to be cultivating a community that sees our potential and that wants to join us on this ride. As we close this round, we close the round March 10th, which will be our kind of our 3-year anniversary. We're really just celebrating the fact that, let's just say our founding customers are part of this ride, and we welcome a few other people as we're kind of winding down that campaign. And then as we focus in on what is the next partner that would take us to scale throughout the South. So are we gonna look for outside capital to be a part of it? Yes. Will we require or really demand that they be a part of our mission of building this beautiful and resilient landscapes across the South? Absolutely. We will not budge on that as our mission, no matter who wants to sort of jump in. If they don't want to jump on that, then it's a non-starter.
To get started on your very own dream landscape, head to surfscape.com and follow them on social media at Surfscape to stay up to date. Atlanta Born and Brand is a production of Connects Media. Make sure and follow the show on social media at ATL Born Brand on Instagram and like our Atlanta Born and Brand Facebook page. And don't forget to subscribe to the Atlanta Born and Brand YouTube channel. Lastly, if you love the show, please spread the word. Share it with your friends and leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Your support helps make sure that more and more people hear the stories of all those folks doing great things all over the city. For Atlanta Born and Brand and Connects Media, I'm Jonathan Hilliard. Thanks for listening, and I'll see y'all soon.